Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today on the Generations Radio Broadcast. And we're going to talk politics on this edition of the program. I was a homeschool grad back in the 1980s and ran for student body president of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and won that election in 1986, served a year as student body president, then ran for governor of the state of Colorado in 1994 and then off to U.S. Senate in 1998. But the big question for us on this edition of the program that we are going to tackle today is, does social change happen from the top down or the bottom up? Now, socialists tend to see it from the top down. That is, they're looking for forced government control to bring about their form of morality. And the strategy of the left is always to centralize power and then to pervert that power. That's pretty much the way it works. Again and again, oftentimes they use Republicans to increase control, to centralize control with, say, the Department of Education, and then a year or two later, or 4 or 5 or 6 years later, the liberals, the Democrats, will pervert it. But whatever the case, there's the centralization of power, and then there's the perversion of power. They've centralized control over education, and then they kick God out of public education in the 1960s and bring the GLSEN and the homosexual training programs right back in, along with the transgendered bathroom. So first, the first step is always to centralize power. And then the second step is to pervert it. Same thing with health care. You bring about billions upon billions of dollars of health care funding, and before you know it, you're throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at abortion funding or the funding of contraceptive abortifacients through Obamacare. And that's the way it works, friends. Same thing with marriage licenses in the 19th century. Marriage licenses, control over marriage licenses. And then fast forward another 100 years, and what do you get but homosexual marriage, incestuous marriage, and perhaps even polygamy and other things coming right around the bend. So the same thing with business, the same thing with birth controls, same thing with education, healthcare, and so on it goes. Again, friends, the strategy of the left is to centralize power and then pervert it to their own ends because they interpret morality and ethics the wrong way, not by the standards of God's law. But for the conservatives, you say, well, how do we get everybody to live moral lives? Well, as it turns out, we don't from the top down. Nancy Reagan's program, Just Say No to Drugs, over a period of 10, 15, 20 years, we look back and say, maybe it didn't do all that much good. Prohibition didn't really do all that much good. Government-enforced morals generally don't work. Well, what then is the purpose of government? Well, as it turns out, the civil magistrate does not use the sword in vain, and they do not use the sword to spank people on the flat end of it. They use the pointy end, and the pointy end is really the purpose of it is to bring about executions. So governments are there to enforce God's laws, to execute murderers primarily, bringing about harsh penalties to the absolute worst crimes, and to be a restraint to the evildoers is the purpose of the law as legislated and executed by the civil magistrate. The government's purpose is to execute murderers primarily and to go after those who kill babies with malice and forethought. So our theory of government is much more limited than that of the socialists. And as Christians, we have to be careful we don't back into Christian socialism or some other form of Marxism, which is something that the do-gooders and the social gospel types have done for the last 100 years or so. But here's an even more important function of government, and that is to preserve freedoms for Christians. If we look at 1 Timothy chapter 2, the Apostle Paul says, therefore, I exhort, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all in authority. Now, what is the objective? What do we want out of kings and those in authority? Here it is, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. There it is, that we would live a peaceable life, that the civil magistrate would just leave us alone in our families, our homeschools, our churches, our worship centers, our discipleship centers, that we would be left alone and would not, our freedoms would not be violated by the the socialists, the Marxists, and those that want to control the education of the next generation to be sure that each successive generation does not take on a biblical worldview and that they are not raised in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. So we want to be sure that governments leave us alone, and we're going to pray for that, and we're going to support candidates that will defend Christian freedoms and maximize the possibility that we will lead the quiet and peaceable lives in all godliness and reverence. So thankfully, there are leaders that stand in the gap, protecting Christians from persecuting forces that are always banging on the gates of our homes and churches to molest us and to, in some way, abridge our freedoms. And so today we're going to bring onto the program two House representatives, legislators from the state of South Carolina. They happen to be homeschool graduates as well, so we're thankful for the impact that home education is making upon the country, and this is just the beginning, my friends, as we see more and more homeschool graduates getting involved. In fact, the report that Brian Ray did about 10 years ago, Homeschooling Grows Up, he found that homeschool graduates were 14 times more likely to be involved in politics than their counterparts in public and private schools. So not unusual. And friends, you can expect, you can fully expect that there will be more. But we're going to talk about why. Why do we get involved with Josiah Magnuson and Jonathan Hill, both House reps in the South Carolina House? Welcome to the program, Josiah. Jonathan, it's good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Kevin. It's a privilege to be here.
I'm so happy that you men are involved in politics. How did this come about? Now, I guess, Josiah Magnuson, you've been involved. This is your first term. Jonathan Hill, this is your second term in the South Carolina House. How did it all begin? Give us a little bit of a background, personal experience.
Sure. Well, this is Jonathan here. Interestingly enough, I was actually not the first homeschooler to be elected into the state house. The first one came several years before me. Joshua Putnam, as a very young man, was elected in kind of a surprise coup type of election that nobody thought he would win. So it just goes to show that when you put yourself out there and try to be involved, that sometimes you can experience some surprising results. I was raised with the mentality that you look around, and if you see a problem and you know something you can do about it, then that's really kind of an obligation, a duty even. And so I never really wanted to be in politics, but based on what I knew, I felt obligated to get involved and worked for probably 6 years at least as an activist and working to volunteer for other campaigns, because my thinking that whole time was, surely there's someone better to do this than me, so I'll find those people and help them get elected. And then eventually God led me to put my own name in the ring and saw fit to put me in there. And then I was in a position to, when my friend Josiah was interested in running, to come alongside and help him, and we worked together to a certain extent. And the Lord has blessed that.
Did your families place that as an important value when they were homeschooling you out there in South Carolina?
Yes, they did. This is Josiah, and I'm very privileged to have a godly heritage, and certainly my dad put a lot of emphasis on involvement and on, we believe in being a disciple of Jesus Christ and on living out our faith. And even at the early age, I was an early teenager, we went to, in 2003, on a hot summer day, the Roy's Rock in Alabama. Chief Justice Roy Moore, had placed the Ten Commandments there in the judicial building. And that was a huge impression on me, to see Chief Justice Moore stand up there and give this, incredible acknowledgement of God in front of this crowd of people. And it was very public, and that inspired me to want to, I think, serve in the needs, of the time. And I think that one of the things that I was able to do, I was able to go with our family in 2007 to the state house, and we worked on a bill in regards to the Real ID Act. There had been an act passed federally in 2005 on the backside of a spending bill for the hurricane, I believe it was. And the Real ID Act, it was a privacy invader. It was unconstitutional. It was a pretty much a national identification card that would be tacked on to state driver's licenses. And so South Carolina, along with 16 other states, said we won't implement this act, this federal action. And so our family helped. We were on this team of, it was maybe about a dozen people. And so I saw, even from the time I was a teenager, that little things make a big difference.
Yeah.
And really, like what we said a minute ago, the power is bottom up. And, you know, I think you started to bring that out, which became a big theme of my life. And so I was able to also become the director of Americans for Constitutional Government based in Greenville, South Carolina. And then, of course, the Lord led, and I saw a need that my representative was not being pro-life. He was attacking a lot of conservative issues, even though he claimed that he was conservative. And so I decided he needed to be held accountable. And lo and behold, I actually then was elected. And I'm just grateful to God for that opportunity and to the people of my district.
You think that Christians can make a impact in government at any level?
I think absolutely. I think Samuel Adams said this, which I really, it has meant a lot to me over the years. He says, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate and tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. I think down through time, we always see that it's a small group. And I think when Christians band together, have a strong community, a strong moral foundation, and really just look to the Lord for their strength, I think there's no limit to what we can accomplish.
And do you think Christians have a duty to get involved, to defend their rights, as the Apostle Paul did at Philippi? He had the city council come down, and he needed their apology on the table today as he was released from prison. You may remember the story. But it seemed to me that the Apostle Paul was dead to rights, committed to fighting for his rights along the way, despite the fact that he had a good attitude towards his sufferings. He still seemed to have an obligation, feel an obligation to fight for his rights. Do you think that applies to about every Christian out there?
I think it does, but I think also one of the things that I see all through Scripture is the principle of loving our neighbor. And I believe, and how I look at it is, I'm involved politically not so much for my own rights, although I do hope that the Lord will one day give me a family, and that will be, you know, so crucial that I have kind of preserve liberty for my posterity. I do see that, but I see it in even more so as loving my neighbor and preserving other people's rights and meeting the needs that we come across, because I think what Christ calls us to is to be servant leaders and to help and to meet the needs. So that's how I see it.
Let me ask you about the experience you've had in the South Carolina House. Do you get a sense that there is a battle of principalities and powers that go on at the highest echelons of government? And is it more of a spiritual battle? I mean, do you present the area, the arena of politics, as something of a battle?
You know, it definitely is a battle. A good friend of mine says that politics is nothing more than the adjudication of power. In essence, it's war. And I definitely see it in that vein. You know, just like you mentioned, that the forces of evil are always grasping for grains of power to centralize and convert it. We certainly see that in every aspect. And that's why this country was established on the idea that things work better from the bottom up. I mean, not only do you have government, but you also have different tiers of government. You have local issues, you have state issues, you have federal issues, and at least as late as the pre-Civil War days when Alexis de Tocqueville wrote his work, Democracy in America, up to that point in time, he says every question of federal versus state sovereignty had been settled in favor of the states up to that point in time. Now we see that trend being reversed, where now the states are ceding more and more of their power. The federal government is amassing more and more of that power. But within the state house, one of the things that really surprised me was just the way a few powerful individuals within the state house hold. And that's probably not entirely unique to South Carolina, but the Speaker of the House, a few specific committee chairmen, the President of the Senate, all collectively hold far more power than even the governor here does.
So how does a Christian make a bit of an impact on those areas in which he will function? I mean, how are you guys? How do you feel that you can make an impact there?
This is a very, very fertile opportunity for Christians to be involved and to glorify God and to advance his kingdom. So I definitely think that we have to realize where power comes from. Ultimately, it comes from God. As Christians, we have to realize that we're not supreme. And so when we realize that we are subordinate, as the Roman centurion told Christ back in his day, that I too am a man under authority. I tell this one go, and he goes, and this one come, and he comes. And Jesus marveled at that, because the centurion was basically saying, I have faith in you, Jesus, because I know that you are under the authority of your Father in heaven. And so that is the mentality that we've lost, and that's where I think here in South Carolina and in our entire country, we have Christians involved in politics have a unique opportunity to remind people that every problem isn't going to be solved by government, except for the government of God. Only God, in the end, can right every wrong. Only God can perfectly enact justice in every single area. In the last century, there was a British judge by the name of John Fletcher Moulton, and I love this quote. He talks about obedience to the unenforceable, and I think that really kind of gets to what you were talking about earlier, that government isn't really suited to enforce every single ideal when it comes to morality or whatever. You mentioned prohibition and a few other things. But he says that obedience to the unenforceable is the extent to which the individuals composing the nation can be trusted to obey self-imposed law. He's, talking about the law of the conscience. Am I going to do the right thing because it's right, even though nobody's around to make me do it?
I spoke with Senator Ted Cruz a couple of years ago when he was running for president, and he told me he didn't think there was a way that the federal government would be reversing Obergefell any time too soon, because he felt there had to be something of a revival. There had to be, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of pastors rising up and preaching a message of repentance. There's got to be something in the grassroots going on. And if there's nothing there, he didn't see that there's anything going to happen in politics. Do you see that there are limitations to what government can do?
This is Josiah. Yes, I think that there definitely are limitations. We go back to something the founders talked about, which is the concept of virtue. And I think Ted Cruz is in good company with people like John Adams. He says, virtue is to liberty what the soul is to the body. And James Madison says, is there no virtue among us? He's asking this question. Is there no virtue among us? There be not. We are in a wretched situation. No theoretical check, no form of government can render us secure. So really, what James Madison is saying, the author of the Constitution, in effect, he says, no check or balance in government, in the structure of government, is going to be sufficient to bridle the people if the people themselves don't have this virtue, this moral courage and inner character to do what's right. And I think it goes back to responsibility. And a lot of what I see today is an entertainment culture, and even because of postmodernism and some of the secular humanism and such that's just pervaded, there's almost a loss of the link of cause and effect. We see that people basically don't take ownership of their own lives, of their own actions, and so what that has resulted in is a lot of apathy and also a lot of dependence on outside sources, big government being the prime example of this, to where people expect the government to be a big sugar daddy. And we see in South Carolina that this is a huge problem. We're taking so much federal money. It's, I think, 39% of our state budget right now is paid for directly by the federal government. And so this is conservative states as well as liberal states. It's just an across-the-board cultural problem that we need to get back to virtue, the moral courage to actually do what's right, to take responsibility, and to ultimately turn back to Jesus Christ.
I guess I'm wondering how we can push power back downhill from Washington. It looks like Texas is probably looking for billions of dollars from federal aid to get them out of the Houston storm. effects. You know, I'm guessing that's going to hurt states' rights. What do you think that state representatives should do to try to re-solidify some semblance of states' rights in our day?
We do see the avenues being created to restore states' rights. And one example that I would put forward is the Cajun Navy. What we see in Texas and Louisiana is neighbors helping neighbors. This is communities coming together that aren't dependent on federal aid, but instead are dependent on God and one another. And I believe that if that is replicated across the country, that is really an example of what virtue is, that they're getting outside their comfort zone, they're taking courage, and they're facing their fear and actually exercising responsibility. And so I think that's the pathway. It's not any particular structural path. You know, we hear different proposals, the Convention of States, or even people floating secession or different things. Those are all structural changes, but what we need is not structural changes, but individual heart changes and action changes. Mm. And I think when that is cultivated among we the people, then we'll see the results, and the fruit will be born in things like states' rights, in things like saying no to the unlawful exercise of federal government power.
And what you're talking about, substantive change versus just a structural change. Unless there's a substantive change, there's no sense in pushing for structural change. And how does that come about in the local communities? Give the average family some ideas for how they can begin to engage their responsibilities in their local communities and thereby drive power downhill.
Well, Kevin, I love this question because this is exactly what I think we need and what Jonathan and I are focused on. We have basically four major action steps, and what we're trying to do is bring forward some ideas that the founders of our country actually said. How do we address a problem of rising tyranny? It comes back to community, and it comes back to exercising the tools in the Bill of Rights, for example. But in order to get to where we can do that, we've got four major points. Really, we want people to go and meet their neighbors, show them that they care. It's just an outreach. It's just as simple as going across the street and talking to other people, reaching out. We've got to show love to our neighbors, and people really typically don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm. So that's the first thing. The second thing would be to educate and equip yourself, especially for resiliency against, you know, a crisis. And we feel like if we continue down the route that America is taking, we are going to have some judgment on our country. We are going to have some situations, you know, with our trillions of dollars of debt and so forth, where we're going to have to band together. We're going to have to address some even more critical problems.
Big
so
time.
We want people to have resiliency and preparedness in their communities. So equip yourself. And also reading is really a key part of this. Getting into not just the Bible, though, that's the foundation, right? But into books, the writings of the founders, and so on. Number three, we would say get involved with a mentorship group or start one, because we need to be communicating the values of America to the next generation. Apprenticeship, discipleship, these are things that I think a lot of times we're missing in our communities. But then finally, next time you see a need, just ask yourself this question: how can I address the need? Not how can I look for another person to address the need. Take personal responsibility. And if God has given you the gifts to be able to address it, the resources, go out and take ownership and show virtue and try to do what you can to meet that need.
Great stuff.
Add to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jonathan.
Good.
You know, I think there's a tendency even among Christians that the mentality of this, we've got to grab power from the top down, exists even among the church. And I think we have to, even among ourselves, just address that and just remind people that, you know, we can go no further. We are not God, first of all. We can go no further than God goes. We can't even really go as far as God goes in a lot of areas. So, you know, we just need to recognize that our ability to address these things is within our spheres, and trust God to address it, you know, in the greater sphere.
Great stuff today on the Generations broadcast. This, my friends, sensible and biblical strategy for every family listening to the program. We hope that tens of thousands of families that hear this program will engage at this level. So please get involved at your community level. Jesus calls us to these good deeds in our communities. And as we embrace Our responsibilities, guess what, but that rights and freedoms will always attend. As we embrace the responsibilities God has laid out to families, to churches, to local communities, and to helping our neighbors, friends, you're going to find that rights and freedoms will automatically follow, because rights and responsibilities are two sides of the same coin. And that, my friends, is a biblical way to look at this issue of political freedom and the importance of getting involved at some level. This has been so inspiring and equipping. I appreciate what you've done, my friends. Josiah Magnuson and Jonathan Hill, both homeschool grads and also serving for the South Carolina House as representatives in government. I'm sure that your pattern, your example, will be an inspiration to hundreds, if not thousands, of other young homeschool grads as well. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, sir.
And if you would like more information on this, check out the website for Josiah Magnuson and Jonathan Hill. It's called thevirtuesolution.com. There you can sign up for more information. They're hoping to establish microhubs in every state across the country. Again, friends, to sign up to thevirtuesolution.com, just go to the website and you can sign up right there. It's thevirtuesolution.com, thevirtuesolution.com, for more information on this approach to getting involved at the local community and working from the bottom up. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
If you want the right worldview for your news, you'll want the right worldview for your children's education. That's why we've produced the Worldviews in Conflict curriculum for your teens. It's a curriculum that will equip them to engage the war of the worlds. Check it out at theworldview.com/curriculum. That's theworldview.com/curriculum. It's Wednesday, September 13th, AD 2017. This is the Worldview in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. President Donald Trump plans an aggressive travel schedule, taking him to as many as 13 states over the next 7 weeks to sell the idea of a tax overhaul as the administration tries to avoid repeating the communications failures of its attempt to repeal Obamacare, reports Bloomberg Politics. The strategy calls for the president to visit states he won where a Democratic senator is up for re-election next year, including Florida, Indiana, Michigan, Montana, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said they hope to make the new provisions of tax law retroactive to the start of the year. President Donald Trump never got a 3-month honeymoon from the American press, as is the tradition. According to the Media Research Center's analysis, 89% of the media's Trump coverage was negative during the first 3 months of the administration, and the hostility continues unabated. In June, July, and August, broadcast evening news coverage of Trump was 91% negative. Former Secretary of State and twice-failed presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has a message for Democrats who want her to fade into the background. She's not going anywhere. Clinton made that clear in an interview promoting her book, What Happened, with National Public Radio's Rachel Martin.
There are some Democrats out there saying they don't want you to do that, that writing this book is opening old wounds, relitigating a past, and it doesn't help move the party forward. Have you reconciled that people might not want you around as the party steps forward?
Well, they don't have to buy my book, and they can turn off the radio when they hear me talking. Not going anywhere. I have the experience. I have the insight. I have the scars that I think, give me not only the right, but the responsibility to speak out.
A new Rasmussen poll that came out yesterday found that 61% of likely voters think it's time for Hillary Clinton to retire. Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi felt compelled to coach, in real time, a homosexual audience about when to applaud during a speech she was giving, reports the American Mirror. In an especially awkward moment, Pelosi told GLAAD to applaud for former President Barack Obama.
We were very proud of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and President Obama was so very much a part of that.
But no one clapped. After you could hear crickets, Pelosi said this.
Now, let's hear it for President Obama. That's an applause line. I'll tell you when it's an applause line if we're not kind of in sync.
6 deaths in Florida have been blamed on Hurricane Irma, along with 3 in Georgia and 1 in South Carolina. At least 35 people were killed in the Caribbean. An estimated 13 million Floridians, or 2/3 of Florida's population, remain without power. Officials warned it could take weeks for electricity to be restored. More than 180,000 people huddled in shelters in the Sunshine State. It's another powerful testimony of the transforming work of Christ. After Alim was thrown into the slammer for running an ambitious drug smuggling operation in Central Asia, he read the Book of John, given to him by a cellmate out of sheer boredom. By his own admission, quote, "I neglected the spiritual questions. I was empty, and I didn't want to live. But I met Jesus through the Book of John," unquote. Today, according to Open Doors USA, Alim is using his skill set to oversee the dangerous work of smuggling illegal Bibles throughout 5 nearby countries, providing believers with the vital words of Jesus to sustain their Christian walk. Colossians 1:21-22 says, "Although you were formerly alienated and hostile in mind, engaged in evil deeds, yet he has now reconciled you in his fleshly body through death in order to present you before him, holy and blameless and beyond reproach." If the Bible Distribution Center is discovered, it will be shut down and Alim will return to prison. Pray for Alim and help pay for more Bibles through the link in our transcript today at theworldview.com. Despite the pro-life stance of the Catholic Church, 61% of Catholic Brits now are in favor of baby killing in the womb, according to the 2016 British Social Attitude Survey. Just 5 years ago, that number was only 39%, indicating a massive paradigm shift. Psalm 127:3 says, "Truly, children are a gift from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." And finally, Verizon has pledged to waive all voice, data, and text charges for customers in the affected areas hit by Hurricane Irma until the storm passes, reports the Good News Network. A list of the zip codes participating in the offer can be found in our transcript at theworldview.com. And that's The World View in 5 minutes on this Wednesday, September 13th, in the year of our Lord, 2017. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ. What kind of worldview do your children get? The vast majority of teens from Christian families are abandoning a biblical worldview, according to the Barna Group. Sadly, many parents do not realize that the curriculum they have chosen for their children actually conveys the wrong worldview of history, science, life's purpose, and truth. Pass on the faith to your children with a distinctively Christian education. Check out our Christian discipleship curriculum at theworldview.com/curriculum. That's theworldview.com/curriculum.